I'm going to go ahead and introduce our speaker this morning as he will be leading us through our words of meditation. His name is E. Ben Posey, and he is a longtime friend of the church. He was born in Germany to American parents and came to America aboard a troop transport ship. He graduated from the United States Military Academy at West Point and received an MBA degree from the University of West Florida. He proudly wears the title of Assistant Groundskeeper at the Vietnamese Buddhist Temple, Dieu De, for over 10 years. And he likes that title because that is his task, to cut the grass. He has been married to Magali Posey from Sao Paulo, Brazil, where they have raised a blended family of 5 children. He currently has 10 grandchildren with one on the way. So we'd like to welcome Ben Posey to our congregation this morning.
Good morning. And it's an honor and privilege to be here. And I'm amongst many friends that I've been involved with throughout my life and throughout this community. And it's a great joy. And I'll take a second here and clear my mind. Once in a while, I get nervous, and I'm probably nervous right now, so let me unpack my bag. I was asked to contrast the principles of the Unitarian Universalist Church and Buddhism, and I took the opportunity to look and read, and in Buddhist tradition, I would simply say, yes. And I would go home, and Aaron would be sitting there going, you're supposed to talk about this stuff. My wife would say, hallelujah, he said it in one word. So, I wanted to take an opportunity because this is a celebration that will carry on in tomorrow, and I've had the joy and opportunity to get to know Jerry and Bob Eddy, and they will be part of the discussion that I will talk about. And I'm going to read a passage from Ecclesiastes, time for everything, and that can be the words of meditation and silence. A time for everything. There is a time for everything, and a season for every activity under heaven. A time to be born, and a time to die. A time to plant, and a time to uproot. A time to kill, and a time to heal. A time to tear down, and a time to build. A time to weep, and a time to laugh. A time to mourn, and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones, and a time to gather them. A time to embrace, and a time to refrain. A time to search and a time to give up. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace.
We will sing our meditation hymn while remaining seated. Number 352, Find a Stillness.
Another Day in Paradise. It's a beautiful music we heard this morning, and thanks for everyone that advised and helped me put this together. I wanted to read a poem, and then I'm going to do a discussion. Or actually, we would call in the Buddhist temple a Dharma talk. Discussion generally involves the interaction of individuals, so I will take pause in that. This is a poem, and it's written by Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh. His words, as he gets older and comes to the transformation in his life, become more powerful because I got to witness him. And I got to witness him in Vietnam. I got to witness him in Mississippi. And his words are very beautiful. And they're also very deep. And so when he writes a poem, there's a meaning into it. Most of us took English in school, and the English professor or teacher would say, there's that meaning. And we would, I know when I was a student, I never could get that meaning. So what do you mean? The name of this poem is Recommendation. Promise me this day, promise me now. While the sun is overhead, exactly at the zenith, promise me. Even as they strike you down with a mountain of hatred and violence, even as they step on you and crush you like a worm, even as they dismember and disembowel you, remember, brother, remember, man is not our enemy. The only thing worthy of you is compassion, invincible, limitless, unconditional. Hatred will never let you face the beast in man. One day when you face this beast alone, with courage intact, your eyes kind, untroubled, even as no one sees them, out of your smile will bloom a flower, and those who love you will behold you. Across 10,000 worlds of birth and dying, alone again, I will go on with bent head, knowing that love has become eternal. On the long, rough road, the sun and the moon will continue to shine. So I was asked to look at the Unitarian Universalist principles, and you know, as I understand them and I read them here, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equality, and compassion in human relations, acceptance of one another, encouragement to spiritual truth in our congregations, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, the right of conscience, and use of the democratic process within our congregation and in society at large, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, and respect for the interdependent web of all existence for which we are a part. And I'm going to leave that with you. As I learned in practice, of Buddhist practice, is that you listen and then you test it for yourself. You test those principles. Does it make sense? Is it going to keep me on a path? And during the Buddhist time, there was the questions. There was a time of change. And I'm honored to have an expert sitting in front of me. And I'm deeply humbled, Doc. Good to see you. And I'm going to read a little bit. And during the Buddha's lifetime, those of the Brahmanic faith prayed that after death they would go to heaven to dwell eternally with Brahma, the universal God. One day, a Brahma man asked the Buddha, "What can I do to be sure that I will be with Brahma after I die?" And the Buddha replied, "As Brahma is a source of love to dwell within him, you must practice the Brahma abodes, or four immeasurable minds." The four immeasurable minds, which are love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. The Buddha respected people's desire to practice their own faith, so that is why he encouraged the Brahmin man in his own language. If you enjoy walking meditation, practice meditation. If you enjoy sitting meditation, practice sitting meditation. But preserve your Jewish, Christian, or Muslim roots. That is the best way to realize the Buddhist spirit. If you're cut off from your roots, you cannot be happy. So within the Buddhist practice, the four immeasurable minds, the Buddha in his teaching often included the four immeasurable minds. Another way of thinking of the four immeasurable minds is true love. And my question then is, do you know true love? Do you know true love? The first of the immeasurable minds is love. And often we will say in the Buddhist practice, especially in North America, we'll say loving kindness. Because we love hamburgers. We love hot peppers. But in our society, we've made this word love take on many shapes and many forms. So often we'll say loving kindness to kind of take away different connotations of the world. But my understanding, love has two components. Love and understanding is true love. And I wanted to share a story, an insight, a moment in time when I looked at an individual. Her name was Jerry. And I thought for a second, man, your husband Bob must really love you. Your husband Bob must really love you. Because what I was witnessing was freedom. If you love something, it can be free around you. True love is about freedom. And here I was watching a brilliant woman practice meditation in my temple, and her husband, who was a preacher in a church. And I said, wow, that's really love. Wow, that's love. And later she would pass away, and before she died, she shared with me an insight. And later I would speak to her husband, and I would say, Bob, you really loved her. You know, Bob, you really loved her because she used to come to my temple and practice. And that is exciting. And he kind of smiled, and the way Bob smiles. And so I like to remember them in that fashion. You know, is that, you know, two people can be together for a long part of their lives, and they can love each other, but they can have an understanding. And true love is about understanding each other. Once I was sitting in a Dharma talk with the Dalai Lama, and in the discussion, Dalai Lama and the translation, and often in my household and in the temple, you'll hear me use the expression, lost in the translation. It's lost in the translation. That doesn't sound right, but it was lost in the translation. And in the translation, Dalai Lama had a hard time understanding. He said, you North Americans don't love yourselves? You don't love. How can you love someone else if you don't love yourself? And we might equate that as, well, they're narcissistic, or you know, they have a big ego. But it's something more soft and gentler about, if I love myself, then I have the capacity to love others. And that's a very powerful statement, that when you love yourself, you're not suffering as much. That allows you then to love others. Love and understanding. I also knew a gentleman. His name was Joe. Joe the shoeshine guy. And Joe lived downtown Pensacola. And Joe knew the history of our town because he shined shoes. And Joe also had a sweetheart by the name of Miss Lily. And And what I got to know Joe over the years, I got to see the things in his town that nobody wants to see. We don't want to look at it. We don't want to reach out and say, hey, that isn't right. Joe showed me that. You know, Joe didn't have a car, so often he'd come by and he'd say, hey, could you take my sweetheart to the hospital? And in our firm, we kind of adopted him. And in the process, I got to know Joe. And Joe, we shared. And what I noticed was he was always doing things for Miss Lily. And sometimes he would do things, lean right, lean left, but he was doing stuff for her. He was getting food. He was getting money because they needed things. They didn't have the money for medical care. They didn't have the money to live in a nice house like a lot of us understand. And I come to realize one day when he asked me a question, and I said, I realized Joe couldn't read. He lived his life in Pensacola, and he couldn't read. So he'd ask me, what do you think of that? And I'd say, oh, I think this. And then he'd recite what I told him. And he's since passed, both he and his lovely bride. But what I learned from them is even in deep poverty, he loved Miss Lily, and he did everything for her. And that is, in part of love, is sharing that love with others, loving kindness. The second of the four immeasurable minds is compassion. And compassion is recognizing suffering. Just like the baby, you see a baby crying, and the baby's, you're in the movie theater, and the baby is crying, the baby is suffering, and all we want that baby is to go away. Go away. We see people suffering, and we want them to go away. And this is a very hard one. Very hard one. My grandson, a very smart young man, and I always have to tell him, gear down, you're driving your mother's nuts. I tell him, take pause. Take pause for a second. You know, paw of an animal, but for him, I had to equate it to a paw. And I go, listen twice. Listen twice. Speak once. In Buddhism, we talk about, in compassion, deep listening, deep silence. The bodhisattva of compassion is, one time I was doing a talk in Vietnam, and I couldn't remember the English version, or actually the Pali version of the bodhisattva of compassion, and all I can think of was Kwantayam Bodhat, and later a nun was correcting me and said, Avalokiteshvara. That's a real tongue twister, but many of us recognize the symbol of many arms, and it's like a mother able to hold you, the deep listening, because she hears your crying, and we all cry in different ways. We cry in silence, and so we learn to recognize the suffering in others, and suffering manifests itself in many ways and many actions. And we have a tendency to want to turn that off real quick. Get that baby out of the theater. Turn that noise off. Go away. Instead of recognizing and understanding the suffering. Love our enemies. Often we're hurt. One time I was in Hanoi, Vietnam, and I was there with a retreat with Zen Master Thich Nhat Hanh. And I had no idea what I was doing there. The senior nun at my temple, a very beautiful soul, and said, if you want to understand Buddhism, go to Vietnam, go to the retreat with Zen Master Thich Nhat Hanh. I went, okay. And next thing I know, I'm on a plane to Hanoi. I grew up in a military base. My father fought the Vietnam War, my stepfather. My biological father was drafted in World War II, fought in the Korean War, and the Vietnam War. Now, here I am in Hanoi. I'm at a hotel complex, and we had a retreat. And so I was practicing my walking meditation, which I was told, instructed to do so. And there and behold were some communist military officers. My heart pitter-patter. What I've been taught, what is the message my community, my society has taught me? Is real simple. Extinguish them. Extinguish these people. They are the enemy. And I watched them as I was walking. They were drinking coffee. And they were laughing and joking amongst themselves. And I saw the human aspect of these men. And they were younger than me. They were almost my kid's age. So suddenly I knew that they weren't around when Dad was around. And I started to soften a little bit and think about their lives, where they were. I started to look in through their eyes. And the one thing I enjoyed was the coffee. I love coffee. I love drinking coffee, like I said earlier. And it made me think for a minute, I saw their humanness. It didn't take away the past histories, but it showed me the humanness. Later, on another trip, I would go to a hotel, and I was surrounded by monks and nuns, and it was a grand experience. And I noticed one of the gentlemen serving was very nervous around me. He had tattoos. And he shook whenever he started to pour my tea. And I had to reach over and put my hand on it and tell him it's okay. It's all right. I represented fear to him. And the woman of the house, she's a very beautiful lady. She had a hotel that housed the monks and the nuns. And in Vietnamese homes, they have a family altar. It's the tradition. It is the way it is. You go into the home and you show respect to the altar, to the family members that have gone before you. And I decided to go ahead and show homage. And on the altar was a picture of a deceased officer in the Army of the North. And the woman burst into tears. And she said, "You're welcome anytime. You are welcome." It was then I began to understand that peace is something that we have to practice, even against people that we have deep hurt and deep sorrow. Peace takes energy. Peace is effort. It's not something that just happens naturally. So we have to practice deep listening as part of our compassion. My wife just gave me the spiritual moment sign, which said, you're coming down to the end of your time here. The last one is joy. No, the third one is joy. And joy is like you're out in the desert and you see an oasis. I borrow that from the heart of Buddha's teaching. But more importantly, you see a person standing there. You've been alone. And you say, "Wow, there's water. Wow, there's a person standing there. I can go talk to him." And happiness is drinking the water. And happiness is having that conversation, listening and sharing. That is happiness. The last one is equanimity. So we've said love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. No discrimination. Non-attachment to strong ideas. Treat me as a brother. Treat me as a sister. One time I was in Korea, I had the honor and privilege of going to the Korean Military Academy for 1 month. And the message I heard consistently over and over is, treat us like brothers. Treat us like brothers. Don't talk down on us. Treat us as brothers. Buddha talked about equanimity. And in a historical context, you talk about the caste system in India. And now we're talking about equanimity. Or in the United States or in South America, we're talking about equanimity amongst race classes. Treat me as a brother or sister. There is wisdom in equality. There is wisdom in equality. And the Buddha teaches that, equanimity. True love is inter-are, or we'd say interconnected, maybe another word. In the four dimensional minds, true love, you cannot have love without compassion, joy, and equanimity. We cannot have compassion without love, joy, and equanimity. We cannot have joy without equanimity, compassion, and love. And we cannot have equanimity without joy, compassion, and love. They're all interconnected. The Vietnamese have an expression that says, and I'll say it, and I know I'll butcher the word, but that's okay. Chúng ta là một. We are one. We are one. Often we hear competing sides. You know, I remember the example of Zen Master Thich Nhat Hanh. He talked about the left hand and the right hand. And it's exciting because when we think about the example, we think about that in life. Hello, left hand. This is right hand. Hey, right hand. This is left hand. Right hand, you dominate me. You make doors with right-handed doorknobs on it. Right hand, you dominate me. You make a gear shift in a car on the right-hand side. I'm, by the way, left-handed. And right hand says, that's the way it is, because there's more right-handed than there are left-handed. And left hand says to right hand, right hand, I want to extinguish you. I want you to go away. I want to take you far away so that the left, we can make left-handed doors. We can make cars with gear shifts for left-handed. We can make left-handed books. And right hand says, no way. But maybe somewhere in the middle, we can meet. Is that possible? So I laugh at that because we do that. We do that in our day. And that's what equanimity is about. You know, the middle way. And as the teaching of the Buddha is the middle way. Neither left nor right, but in the middle. And often we do get swung left and we get swung right. And we hear the messages on TV and we hear the messages of our pastors. We hear the messages of our teachers and our friends and our family. But we want to find that middle way, and equanimity is that path of the middle way. So we talk about the four immeasurable minds of true love. Do you know true love? It is a practice. It is a practice that you do every day, every moment, because it takes energy and it takes effort. And just like the Unitarian Universalist principles, it takes practice. It takes every day, every moment, measuring ourselves, saying, is this right or wrong? Should I do this? Let me check myself. So I leave you with the ideas of the four immeasurable minds of love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. You know, you have the Unitarian Universalist principles, and I say, yes, they're compatible. They're just phrased differently. They're just phrased differently. And I want to thank you all for listening. I think my wife's about ready to go like this. And I appreciate your patience and time. And thank you, Aaron.